Welcome everyone to the Borough of Roosevelt Council meeting for March.
Oh my God.
April 4th, 2022 at 7:05 p.m. Due to the coronavirus and the need for social distancing, this meeting will also be held remotely and available to the public in a live feed. The meeting is beginning at 7:05. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 12, 2022, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Here.
Mr. Essikar?
Barely.
Mr. Hamilton?
I'm here.
Ms. Hirschstrom?
Here.
Mr. Martha?
Here.
Mr. Trammell?
Here.
Mayor Malkin?
Here. Okay. We have a lot on our agenda tonight, and I believe we have to go into executive session as well. So we'll just get right into it with going to open the floor for public comment on agenda items only at 7:07 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who can comment or ask anything about the agenda items? Okay. Being none, I will close the floor at 7:07 p.m. All right, we're going a little bit out of order tonight. The first thing I have it's a presentation by Neil Schloss. And rather than make him sit through our entire meeting, I thought it would be best if he begins. So Mr. Schloss is going to do a presentation about one of the possibilities for the town for a cannabis business. And so welcome, Mr. Schloss.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you for having me here tonight. I just want to quickly say thank you, Peggy, for inviting me tonight for the presentation. So I just want to start off to explain who I am so you kind of know my background. I'm a CPA for 30 years. My actual office is in Hightstown, New Jersey, and I actually live over in Millstone Township. And I sat on the board of the Millstone Roosevelt Little League back years ago. I was a wrestling coach for 4 years in the Millstone Rec program. And I sat on the Board of Ed for Millstone back in 2013. So pretty active with my community. And of course, I do come into Roosevelt a lot, of course, to pick up my vegetables from the farm over at Mendy's. And of course, I just love the area that we live in. So I'm pretty excited to be presenting to you guys. As far as my background in the cannabis space, back about 20 years ago, a client walked into my office who was a student at the Oaksterdam University out of California. He had a company called Ken Cure Tours, which took patients who were sick out to California, saw the doctors to get the recommendations, at which point they would go to the dispensaries and get their medicine and take it home with them. But I knew the endeavor was pretty expensive to do that. So over time, when technology moved along and the Affordable Health Care Act allowed for telemedicine, I helped design the technology to allow patients from wherever they live to see the doctors and get their recommendations done so they could participate in the Compassionate Use Act of 1996 and get their cannabis delivered to them. So, of course, fast forward to today, and of course, with New Jersey becoming the state allowing for applications to be submitted for cultivators, manufacturers, distributors, delivery licenses, and then retail and testing segments. When I sat down with Peggy to just discuss the model or the idea, the main thing I thought about was, of course, your town is very rural, and looking at the different license options, I was not sure if retail was a mindset that you guys would want. And I'm not sure if a testing facility would be something you'd want, but definitely cultivation, possibly manufacturing, possibly distribution and delivery would be a license that you guys would be considering approval for, so that a company that would be established, like one that I would help establish, would be approved to submit to the state to apply and get the license for this. Out of the six options, it's a decision based on what you guys would want, which licenses would be applied for the town. Cultivation right now is set at 37 cultivation licenses being issued. At this point, there's been 50 applicants around the state have been issued conditional licenses, which of course is above the number that they stated at the state level. But I think some of those cultivation licenses are what's called micro licenses, which there can be an unlimited amount of micro business licenses issued by the state. The requirements for a micro license in any community is that it's 10 employees or less in a 2,500 square foot location that would be used for cultivation or even any of the other spots, retail, et cetera. So with that, the main thing is, of course, is the application process. It's a pretty extensive process doing application involving standard operating procedures in many different areas, a listing of who the owners are, who's applying. And with that, it's a matter of just getting the application. And from what we've heard at the different seminars we've been at, that a town approval probably weighs the most on the application process than anything else. With regards to Roosevelt, I'm aware of three farms that are actually set up as farms, and the fourth farm is really the horse farm off of Rising Sun Tavern Road, which I would assume would not be assigned to grow cannabis if that's a choice made by the town. But of course, I know that there's the Mendes farm, and then I don't know the names of the other two owners, but those would be the places that would be approached to do the cultivation. My thought on the process is that
I believe he's referring to the Long farm and got Mr. Vade's farm.
Thank you, Peggy. So when I talked to Peggy, I talked about the concept of what's called a collective model. So the collective model is that an entity gets created so that the town gets the license approved to cultivate cannabis. And then you can set up a committee that allows multiple farmers to come, and then they can cultivate cannabis for the dispensaries or to convert it into a manufactured product. As far as the taxation goes, by a municipality, that's a determination by the council. And the council can charge up to a 2% fee at the cultivation level, at the manufacturing level, and at the dispensary level. And I think it's a 1% fee for the distributor. So, and at each level, you can collect that 2% tax on the price being it sold at. So that gives options for the town to look at an income stream that could be used to enhance their budget or replace items that are being lost on a budget. So for me, it's like I have 20 years of experience working with manufacturers, distributors, cultivators, and so forth out of California. So, of course, I bring a lot of expertise to the town of Roosevelt on this. So does anyone have any questions on
anything? Obviously, I thought we should look into all the different aspects of the cannabis industry. I think we all know that Roosevelt could probably, you know, make good use of the revenue we bring in especially considering the, you know, what's happening with our school and losing the money from Solar Village. So it, like, just do it, I guess, by raising our hand. Does anyone have anything they want to ask or discuss?
I'd like to ask whether we could get something in writing, because this is just like 5 minutes of a pitch. But is there anything, do you have a flyer? Do you have something that explains everything that I could sit and read?
Sure, I could send that over to Peggy this week. I'm in the middle of tax season trying to finish up the next 2 weeks. So I will definitely get something over to Peggy to pass on to all of you guys.
Okay, and would it include all of the 6 different options and what you think of them?
I could do that. As I said before, I'm not sure if all of you guys are on the page of certain aspects of the licenses, like a retail segment would want to be considered for the town or not. But I can definitely include all 6 if you need it.
Well, yeah, and just what you think, even if it's, I don't think this is a good one or whatever. So, okay, that's it for me.
Neil, what other communities in our area have applied or received licenses?
Specifically around here in this region, I know Millstone has not applied. Hightstown, a dispensary, has applied. But I don't think anyone applied for cultivation, manufacturing, distribution, or delivery. Other than that, I'm not sure any other of the local areas of who applied.
Thank you.
On cultivation, does that have to be inside, or that could be out in the field?
I think it's going to be based on the local ordinance that's established. So, I mean, a lot of the decision making beyond just the issuance of the license will be local ordinances place. So I think it does leave it into the hands of you guys for what will be allowed.
I thought you mentioned you could have a few people cultivating. Do you see it being cultivated on the same farm, different companies with different owners or whatever you want to call them?
I mean, I see, for me, the concern of having multiple strains on one farm or multiple, I'll keep it simple. Like, my thought process is one farmer farms sativa-based strains, another farm would farm indica-based strains, and a third farm could do hybrid-based strains.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay, and does everyone understand what I mean by sativa, indica, and hybrid?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to say words that people like, I'm not sure what the word means. So I just want to make sure everyone understands what I'm saying. So.
And Samian? Never mind.
And Sensimilia, you said?
Yeah.
Well, some of us have done some research years ago into the various kinds of cannabis, but. You know.
Yes. So, I mean, I mean, we could have a farmer that deals with the Sensimilia, or ones that produce the seeds so that you're not having to go out and buy new seeds. You can use the seeds that you're producing from your plants.
How does it work in terms of standardizing a product? I mean, you probably don't want, you know, the strains to change or the products to change and be all over the place. I mean, do they regulate that or control that in any way?
Not that I know of. I mean, as a farmer, I mean, you're more concerned about crossbreeds like that cause your crop to fail because it went to seed too early. So, I mean, it's almost like they talk about killing off the males plants as if they, when they, you start growing a plant to make sure that the males don't cause the females to seed. So, I mean, we would want to make sure that we're covering those areas so that we want to come out with a crop that is profitable rather than a crop that's failed and then you're just throwing it away.
Okay.
That's up to the farmer, I would imagine, right?
I do think that the CRC is probably going to have people that come to the town and confirm that you're, and the testing facility will give results that say that your flower that you cultivated doesn't have any issues of mold, mildew, and a bunch of other options that they'll test for.
Is there any way that you can talk about an example of how much revenue could come off of something like this?
Sure. I mean, if you're doing simple math, I mean, your pound price probably from a cultivator will be about $1,000 to $1,500 per pound. So depending on your growth and how much pounds you get, I mean, you, from that, you can determine your tax revenue from that. Based on the, how much land usage you're using, how much end product you'll get out of it.
There's a formula?
There's somewhat of a formula. Because of course you can grow a plant and some people will let it grow till full growth. So you'll get more output from it. Cause of course you're looking for your, most bang for your buck in that sense. So you want to, but some people will end up bringing their crop down before it's in full growth. So, but I can definitely get you something that kind of gives you a ballpark figure on a conservative side and, of course, an aggressive side of if it's a very, very successful growth. Does anyone else have any questions?
No. So it is legal to grow it on the outside, like, you know, just in a fenced-in farm area, as opposed to I'd assume that most of it in New Jersey was inside of greenhouses.
Indoor growth, I mean, from my experience, doesn't give nature. I mean, like we talk about how the plant wants to grab some of the aspects of what's called terpenes to the plant, which would come from nature giving it its terpenes. So, I mean, I do feel an outdoor grow. I mean, You could struggle with nature, just the elements, I mean, rain, et cetera, if it's not in an indoor grow. But I do think that could be an option as far as giving plants more of the cannabinoids it needs to produce so that it can be.
I understand that. I just thought it was illegal on the outside, but it's really just a matter of like protection, or, you know, people coming in, chopping the plants down, taking them out, or, you know, security.
I think security would be, generally if it's an indoor, you can create more security measures. If it's an outdoor, I mean, you can have people sneaking onto the farms during the nighttime. So that would be one concern coming off of an outdoor grow.
That's what I was just about to ask. How do you stop the thieves?
Yeah. I mean, but is it legal? Is it legal in New Jersey to do it outside?
I haven't read any legislation in terms of indoor versus outdoor options. But most likely it'll be in a greenhouse. I mean, if we were coming in, we'd want to put up a greenhouse to allow indoor grows, but again, I mean, I'm a fan of outdoor grow from California over indoor grown plants.
I think we'd be more in favor of indoor only because things that I've read with communities with the smell that comes from an outdoor grow, it may be a hard sell in our town to get it approved unless it was indoor. I don't know.
Because Bob, I thought I heard that the smell was from cultivation, like processing.
Okay.
My experience is the smell is mostly from hanging it upside down and drying it, I believe, is the smell.
That's exactly right.
Cultivation of it or the processing of it, not growing.
Having done it, I tell you right now that's where the sting comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, the smell is from hanging it and drying it. Yeah, I don't smell of it being out in the woods. Maybe, I don't know. I'll ask around. Yeah.
Does anyone
okay,
else?
This is your company, Neil?
So, it's the company that I currently work with is CanaSense Total Wellness out of California. It's okay. New Jersey is now accepting licenses. A new entity would be formed for the New Jersey entity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And would you import the growers, the people that do it? Would they come in from California or would you get local people?
I would go with I'd rather bring in local to allow for people to get employed locally, help people in the area get hired. So, I might bring them in just to kind of give advice because they grow out west. So, but I mean, I'd prefer to hire locally.
And you know that some of the farmers, you know, already, or at least one of the farmers is amenable to this.
Yes, I do know one of the farmers is amenable to it. I had met, the pharmacist years ago. I mean, probably in 2015. But I haven't spoken to him recently, but I have spoken to the, Mendes.
I have a daughter who lives in, Northern California, in the Humboldt region where okay. there's a lot of growing. And, an interesting thing happened, there's a lot of jobs for, young people and anybody wants to get involved with trimming, right. the product and grooming it and making sure that it's a presentable product. And, they have their little scissors and all. They get paid by the hour, cash, of course. The hourly wage has gone up. Local restaurants and all can't hire anybody for under $25 an hour. Because, and a lot of the kids have jobs that fit into their schedule, part-time jobs, grooming. And, it happens to be a good cash crop and it does provide a lot of jobs, for people in that area. There's a lot of grow shops on different corners and, I've seen that in Oakland too. It does create some offshoots in terms of other businesses and employment opportunities. So, it's an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at the technology that I developed, I mean, CanaSense.com is the technology I developed. My background prior to the cannabis industry was helping a fulfillment center distribution company in Edison integrate their technology together to create a very efficient model. I mean, I worked with all the major retailers on kind of doing the data behind the scenes electronically. So that's the back end for control purposes that I kind of put together as a CPA. But as far as the cultivation side, I mean, that's another area that doesn't really has different controls relating to, the farm security and other stuff. So, but on the front end side, I mean, the CanaSense.com does your validation of consumers for their age as well as if they're medically recommended. So. That's just another area of building this business out is having that in place as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any sort of deadlines on our decision?
As far as if you're trying to go for the 37 cultivation licenses where you can grow more than 2,500 square feet, I mean, they're saying that's 37 till February 2nd of 2023, where they would expand out to more licenses if all the licenses have been given out for the cultivation side. So that's.
So in terms of this year, is it the sooner we decide the better, or how does that work?
I mean, as far as farming goes, I mean, the sooner the better, because then you can get the seeds into the ground for this year and not run into where you're trying to get a late start on a growth cycle. So, I mean, ultimately it's like springtime is a good time to plant the seeds. So we're here now. So if there's delays, it's just going to mean you won't get a crop during this year.
Neil, If you're doing it indoors, where you control the atmosphere, you don't, the time of the year doesn't matter, does it?
No, I mean, if you have an indoor grow with a temperature controlled system in the indoor, then you wouldn't have that.
I would assume that's what you're going to do. You're not going to grow it just out there all by itself. As soon as they smell this, they find out it's there, you won't have anything left over to work overnight.
Understood. Yeah, no, we would do a greenhouse, but I mean, I personally do like an outdoor grow better than an indoor grow for purposes of just what you get out of the plant.
Better crop.
Yeah, quality of material, right. So if you decide, would you have plans for security, I guess?
Hold on. Sorry, Peggy was asking while you were saying, so I didn't hear the questions.
About if you plan to do an outside grow, what type of security would you provide?
That's what I was asking. What do they do in California?
I mean, they use fencing, they use cameras, they use like just the technology to kind of keep an eye on things. I mean, in California, I mean, they have people probably that have their guns ready, but that's a different thought process. Up in Hobart, you'll find people that have their guns to protect their land.
That's right.
We ain't going to do that.
Yeah. No, so you realize state police, our police force here is the state police. You realize that, right?
Yeah,
I'm in Millstone, so we have this, we share the same state police as you guys do.
Okay.
The reason I started with Mr. Schloss is because we are a rural farm community, and I thought it made the most sense since we do have a minimum of 3 farms that could be utilized. But also I thought that with the traffic situation would be very different if we have, you know, agriculture as opposed to a retail store or anything like that. So, I mean, this is just the first step in the process of hearing all the possibilities for Roosevelt to be involved in the cannabis business. I just started with this because it made the most sense to me as far as agriculture and not, you know, we know the traffic wouldn't necessarily be coming into the main part of Roosevelt near the school or near anything. It would just, because all of the farms are, you know, kind of on the entranceway. So, and the other thing that I had learned is that at first, like I thought a greenhouse would be, you know, sort of the optimum. Then I heard that the greenhouses kind of look like Amazon warehouses, which threw me into it.
Yep.
Because we would never want that here. But then I learned that we have the option of dictating whatever that, if we wanted it to be an actual greenhouse with glass that's pretty, we can have that. We can mandate that. It doesn't have to look like a warehouse.
Well, of course, we as a body can write into the agreement anything we want.
Right.
If they sign it, fine. If not, we don't do it. That's all.
I know that the sooner we would act on this, we, you know, perhaps we were not possible for this year, but this is really the first step in examining all of our possibilities.
I have many, many questions about the whole process and what it might entail and what benefits might accrue to the town, to farmers, and that kind of thing. But you know, we can't ask them right here, right now. But I'm wondering if we could have an open town forum on it sometime, perhaps at the school or somewhere else where the public could get involved, could ask questions, and we could all learn a little more about it.
Well, we sent the call out just to get an idea of whether the residents wanted it, and it was 2-1 in favor of wanting some type of business here.
If it's successful, it could be very helpful financially for us. No question about that.
There's a selection bias with flyers that, you know, people who tend to be in favor of something will respond. People who aren't may not even send in their flyers. So, but I think it might be an interesting discussion to have with people in town.
Mike, if you let the town know that we're really serious about doing it on the farm, and as Neil said, And Peggy said, actually, if it's, you know, if it doesn't come into town, into the center of town, into the local areas, into, you know, to our streets, then it's really a no, it's a much easier sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, that has an advantage.
What's your last name and can you spell it?
Schloss, S as in Sam, C-H-L-O-S-S.
S-C-H-L-O-S-S.
S-S. Yeah, and if you come into Heightstown, my building's the center of town by the horse fountain.
Right.
Good. By the horse fountain?
Yeah, right. If you're at the horse fountain and you look, like turn around and look at the building right on the point, that's my building.
Oh, cool. Okay. By the tattoo parlor.
I have a tattoo, two stores down from the tattoo parlor, closer to the fountain.
Cool. I got you. Okay. Like to meet you one day. There you go.
I'm in Roosevelt a lot. I mean,
where is the entrance to the place? On Main Street or on
Mercy? I'm in between the two.
Yeah. Where's the entrance?
There's two entrances, a side entrance for employees and the front entrance is by the horse fountain.
Okay.
So I'm generally here. I'm working from home. And then I come into, like I said, I come into town a lot to see Lawrence and, I go hiking, and fishing over at the park. So I'm in your town a lot. So,
okay. Zoning, would we have to have separate zoning for it?
For cultivation?
Yeah.
I mean, I think since
this is just a farm product.
So, yeah. Mayor, at the moment, last summer, the you guys passed an ordinance that prohibited all cannabis uses under your zoning code at the time when it was uncertain as to what the licensing process and all that sort of stuff would be. So in order to allow the business that Neil is presenting, you would have to change that ordinance. So that would involve introduction, zoning standards being put in place, classifying it by zone, and get Andy Thomas, the planner, involved. And then we would present an ordinance that would go down to the planning board and then come back for a public hearing and adoption here before the council.
How long? How long will it go? Does that take? Couple of months?
I mean, you know, Roosevelt's zoning is not very complicated relative to other towns. No. So,
it's not complicated. Why don't I understand it?
Okay. Just got to call me or Jeremy. Like 8 to 14 weeks, depending on how specific we were getting, you know, in terms of what the regulations were. I mean, I can tell you that I set up all the zoning and everything for Red Bank, which permitted it from last summer until now. And now people are applying for the licenses and coming back for the municipal licenses for the locations and there's their land use approvals. So I'm eminently familiar with what Neil is talking about. If you'd like to pursue something like that here, we could put it together. It's just not going to be, you know, I don't want to give you the impression it's tomorrow because it's got to go to the planning board and stuff like that everything.
Take a couple of months,
Probably. I mean, if you guys made a decision in like a month, we could definitely get it done by the end of the summer for sure. And you know, they only have a few zones here. So it's not like Andy has to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Would it be advantageous for us to preempt everything and change the ordinance now?
The way we talked about it when you guys passed that original ordinance and the way you told, at least the council at that time told the public was that, you know, we're going to prohibit it right now until we see what opportunities are out there. So, you know, you guys are doing exactly what you said you're going to do, you know, check out this opportunity. And then I think you should kind of flesh it out if Neil wants to come here or people Neil's working with want to come here. Then, and, you know, we can't spot zone something or tailor zoning ordinances, but it would seem silly to amend it and then do it again if, you know, it didn't fit the project you guys were pursuing. So maybe if you guys check out the materials Neil has, we still get a good idea. You know, agricultural use isn't going to be that hard to regulate. from a zoning perspective. I mean, it's not like, for example, a dispensary. It's a whole different animal with parking and all sorts of stuff. You already have a rural agricultural and residential agricultural zone here. So, you know, we're just talking basically about zoning licenses pretty much. And putting, and the ordinance I'm talking about would put the tax, you don't have the tax framework in place to get the revenue that the gentleman was talking about. So we would, that a part of that ordinance would be updating your zoning code as well as the general licensing and the tax code to implement the other, the municipal benefits of the cannabis reform law, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. And if I could jump in for 1 second, of course, if it's a thought process by the council to figure out the revenue stream from it, I mean, with the limitations of size, I mean, limits your revenue. So, I mean, I would want to look at ways to maximize the amount that could be produced within the whole town with different ideas to be discussed later, but just more like if you can get more places to grow, then that's more revenue for the town that ultimately helps fulfill the requirements needed for your budgets.
Neil, we would have to change our ordinance before you could do anything, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
Fred, we would have to change our ordinance first before you could do anything.
Yeah, because we opted out.
So in order for Neil's company or who he's working with, his group, to get a license, they must provide written proof from the town, which in a town like yours with a governing body takes the form of a resolution. So the resolution indicates that the type of business that Neil is applying for is permitted under our ordinances. So and that the type of use that is, and the number of licenses are not limited. And the idea being that, let's say, 5 people want to put, I'll use Red Bank as an example, just on the Borough of Red Bank. That's where I've been doing it. Let's say Red Bank has a limit of 3 licenses and 4 people want a business there. The town has the ability to choose which 3 are going to get these resolutions of support. So when you go down to Trenton and, you know, 3 people from Red Bank have a resolution that says they're within our ordinance and they comply, and the 4th person doesn't, that's the check against the, and that's the limitation of the number of licenses, and that's how they're enforcing the limits with that within the Cannabis Reform Act. So in order for Neil to get the license, we would have to change the ordinance, and then for Neil to get the license for something to be placed here, would have to, and forgive me, I'm just using Neil because it's really easy. I know you're just part of a group and stuff.
Correct.
Then you would have need a piece of a document from us, resolution, and for you, in order for you guys to do that and for me and the clerk to sign it, it has to comply with the ordinance. So that's how they double check your municipal regulations versus the state licenses. And I suspect that we'll ultimately have a system like the Alcoholic Beverage License Commission does, POSSE, which basically allows the clerk, Kathleen, to go in from town hall and the applicant to go in from where they're going, from their home or a business, and then everything to kind of be the central filing point for that.
Yeah, and Greg, just one other thing. I mean, you can apply stating that you're applying for a license and you want to go to the town of Roosevelt. And even if they don't have it passed in a resolution, it's just a deficiency that you'd have to clear up before they issue a license. So you can apply beforehand and, of course, know that you're not going to get it. It's just going to be looked at and said, okay, we're going to put it to the side until you clear up that issue. So.
Yes, girl.
What's that?
I said, it goes into escrow until you do
right.
That. They have a checklist like the ABC does. So the ABC will say, oh, you paid your fee. You have to get your sales tax clearance. You have to file all that sort of stuff. So,
okay.
So yeah, there could be, that's a good point. Yeah, there can be overlap there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if you want to really try to move it forward faster, it's like you got to put everything out there and kind of let it all work together and then finally come to your decisions and things that you got to do at the council level, but at the same time, you kind of have taken care of all the other pieces. So they're just sitting there waiting to get resolved by a town ordinance saying that there's approval, but everything else is in place. So.
And I will say that I've been doing this for a while now, obviously over a couple of years since the referendum, and I haven't seen a I'm sure they're out there, but I have not seen a cultivator license. So everyone wants a retailer license or a delivery license. because it's the lowest barrier to entry in terms of, you know, the business itself, in a retail fashion. But this is the, you know, I'm not sure that there will be 34 cultivators that apply. And do you know, be familiar with that?
There's 50 right now that they issued conditional, which is like, how'd they get 50 when there's 37? But, I was told that some of them are micro licenses. So you could be a micro license, taking you away from the 37 count that they're saying. And then I think as it opens, in February of 2023, you can then go back and reapply for a bigger cultivation license and having the smaller ones in place.
If we're just going for, if you're going just for cultivation license versus a retail, and are they going to get some kind of a balance? Let's say they have 40 openings. Will it be 20 and 20, or will it be some other equation?
Say that again as far as the cultivation side?
No, if you say that, let's say they have 40, and right now most of them are retail licenses. Will they have some kind of an amount that they want retail and an amount that want cultivation?
So micro licenses are unlimited. If you are looking for a larger space than the 2,500 square feet for micro license, they will have a limitation. I don't know the exact number for the retail side, if you're above that limit. On the cultivation side, from what I've read, it's 37, but I mean, I was also told, like I said, you can have unlimited micro licenses.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I had mentioned to Peggy the idea, like, home grow is one of those questions, like, can you do home grow? And of course, Sam Delgado, the vice chair of the CRC, said, we don't control home grow, which is kind of taking it outside the realm. And in a town like Roosevelt, if you're looking for maximizing output, I mean, even if you had people in their backyards growing small micro business cultivation licenses, you can pretty much get a bigger bang for your buck.
That's me.
Right?
I did. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, I just want to throw this out there. It's not an opinion. I have informed opinion. But there's nothing to preclude us from having an agriculture license and a retail store. I'm just saying, you can have more than one business.
Sure.
Stop saying retail, please. No retail. We don't need the traffic.
Yeah, I mean, they can come to Hightstown, and then the product can come from Roosevelt as a method.
In the flyers that we received, the ones that were returned, they were 2-1 in favor of having something here. And then we listed the 6 possibilities, and it was 2-1 in favor of retail. But I prefer, personally, agriculture.
That, you know, that's easy to say. When you ask them, the 2-1, the two, ask them where they put it, where will they put it, and then find out what, you know.
Well, you know, yeah, not in my
backyard, you know?
Yeah, well, you can really.
Yeah, really.
I was just making a joke. We have a liquor license available too, so we could really have a
store. Oh,
goodies.
Have fun, boy.
Does anyone else have anything that they would like to ask or say? All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Schloss. We appreciate this.
Thank you, Mayor.
After we, you know, council has a chance to discuss it, listen to all of our other options and possibilities.
And he's going to send the material.
Yeah, and if you could send the material.
Okay, I will do that. And then I'll talk to you guys soon. If you want to come into Hightstown, say hello. You're more than welcome. And if you see me in Roosevelt, just say hello. I'd love to meet all the other council members.
You sound lonely. You're going to be asking for trouble.
And just on one last piece is, outside of cannabis, I know psilocybin mushrooms will be probably brought into play in the future, just looking down the road with how it's used for medical purposes, and it's becoming more people are becoming aware of that. I know you guys have the lead expert on mushrooms in the country who lives in Roosevelt. So, I mean, that's something that the council should just either have a quick discussion on so that they know that that's going to probably come down the pike for options of other things to grow that would be allowed. Okay?
Do we need a cow pasture for that?
Everyone know who Neil's referring to? Rod Tullis is our recognized mushroom.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. That's just another part of the bigger picture to keep in mind, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your night, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon.
Bye-bye. Take care. Yeah.
Night, guys.
Nice to meet you.
Same here.
Okay, so I'm going to come to approval of minutes, but we don't have minutes this week to present to you. This will be held until our next meeting of the 18th. Under correspondence, we have a letter from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection dated March 8, 2022 regarding compliance evaluation and assistance inspection for the Roosevelt Borough Water Department. So
we're all in compliance.
Everything is done perfectly. You have it in your packet. All right, we come to ordinances. We have a public hearing and second reading of Bond Ordinance 2022-02, a bond ordinance providing for various roadway improvements to Pine Drive, appropriating $420,000 therefore, and authorizing the issuance of $200,000 bonds and notes to finance a portion of the cost thereof, authorized in and by the Borough of Roosevelt and County of Monmouth, New Jersey. I'm going to open this for public comment at 7:52 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who would like to ask or comment about this ordinance? And being none, Michael, I'll close it at 7:52 p.m.
Mayor, if you'd like, I could just mention briefly that this is the Pine Drive road work and water mains, and that we've received $180,000 DOT grant, and we're putting in $40,000 down payment from our cap fund, which amounts to the $220,000 that we have in our coffers already. Which is why we need the additional $200,000 to make it 420. So half of that money essentially is we already have. It's most of it's grant money.
Well, dedicated.
And this is just a requirement to float the bond to do the rest of it.
Motion to approve.
You made a motion to
adopt.
Second.
I'll second that.
Joe.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Essikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. Ordinance 2022-02 has been adopted. Our second ordinance is Bond Ordinance 2022-03, a bond ordinance providing for various water utility improvements, appropriating $345,000 therefore, and authorizing the issuance of $345,000 bonds and notes to finance a portion thereof. Cost thereof. Authorized in and by the Borough of Roosevelt and the County of Monmouth, New Jersey.
Is that for the Pine Drive one?
Yeah.
Yeah, same
for the water.
Yeah, they're compound. One's the water and one's the paving.
Right.
Yep.
Do I have a?
You got to open. This is a public hearing and second reading.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm going to open the floor for public comment at 7:55 p.m.
Yep.
From the public, have anything they'd like to discuss with ordinance 2022-03?
Move the question.
None. I will close the floor at 7:55 p.m.
And just, if I might, Mayor, just for a few people and maybe newcomers on the council, This is temporary financing in the form of a bond anticipation note, but we're expecting a 40-year term bond for this because these have a usable life, as far as financing of 40 years. We expect to get more out of it with the new materials that they put in, and I think this could very well last twice that. But the reason that they're financed, we could take it out of our regular water sewer budget if we wanted to, but we don't want to because the rates are so low in terms of financing, and it would be unfair for current homeowners who may only be living here for a couple of years to pay the full cost of something that should be spread out over 40 years. It would be more equitable to people who are living here for a while and that kind of thing. So that's what it is. And we do a lot of bonding and we pay it off over time. So, it's a good thing.
And none of us can know whether it really does last 40 or 80 years.
Yeah.
And also we're very close to finishing the large bond from 1990, I believe. Right. So this will be a job that also.
Joe, we made the last payment a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it's kind of a hedge on this particular bond. So
this is an easy way to do it. It really is. And very inexpensive in a way. Because
let me just comment that it seems like we're working on all the old, the original town, the water pipes as we do the road paving, we're doing the water pipes at the same time. So the oldest water pipes in town are slowly getting completely brought up to new specs. So
that's like
the way we're going to have a
infrastructure. Yeah. As we get
that's a good thing for everybody.
Well, and also to add to that, during a time when interest rates are the lowest that they've been in decades, so the timing is perfect.
We're getting very inexpensive.
And the rates are very, very low.
Absolutely.
All right, do I have a motion?
You do.
Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Esikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Bergstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Bond ordinance 2022-03 has been adopted.
At first reading, right?
No.
Second reading. No. Like you missed the last.
This is second. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great.
But don't... Both of them. Yeah. For both of them.
Right.
Yeah, I'm behind one meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, come to the consent agenda resolutions. Do I have a motion?
You want to read all four?
You want me to read them? Okay. All right. Resolution 22-48 is payment of bills for April 4th, 2022. Resolution 22-49, awarding a contract for maintenance of public lands in the borough to Kyle's Lawn and Landscaping.
Right.
Resolution 20-50. Resolution authorizing execution of consulting services agreement with Forestry Service LLC for a tree inventory. And Resolution 22-51, resolution authorizing temporary emergency appropriations number 2.
I have a question. I'll motion to approve. But I have one question.
Go ahead.
We have, Monmouth County has a tree commission. They used to come out and take a look at the green belt all the time. Why would we get a private company?
Isn't this separate, Michael, that has to do with the environmental commission with,
Yeah, I can respond to that. Environmental commission received a grant. It's not paid for out of the borough funds. We received a grant for somebody to do a tree inventory to look at all the dangerous trees. And mainly it's in the parklands along the streets, the school grounds, the triangle, the cemetery, those kind of areas where we're looking at the trees, the health of the trees, trees that may need some protection.
I think you mentioned everyone in the whole town.
Also, those are species of trees. yeah, that are there also.
Right. Right. We value trees as we all know, and we want to make sure they're well cared for. And
we had asked, we were concerned that if a tree was identified as hazardous, that we may be responsible for all of the trees, and you know what that would do, like budgetary concerns for that. But that doesn't factor in.
I just wanted to add in that light, since it's relevant, that I was in contact with John Ord from the school board, and there's some trees and some areas around the monuments that are adjacent to the school grounds that need some work. And so we may want to ask our tree person to, our forestry expert to look at some of those trees and see what needs to be done, and then remediate that and try to clean up that area a little bit.
Okay. I make a motion.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda resolutions.
You do.
Second?
I'll second it.
Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ethicor?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Herbstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, consent agenda resolutions have been adopted. Reports of committee chairs, Councilmember Atwood, Environmental Health and Safety.
Nothing new.
Councilmember Esikoff, Administration.
Nothing new. Everything is working.
Councilmember Hamilton, Finance.
Nothing new, but whenever you see the temporary budgets pass, it means it's time to do a regular budget. And we're going to have to start looking at that. And I'd like council members and committee chairs to start thinking about anything that their committee or that their area of jurisdiction, as far as their committees, things that they look at or may want to do, be incorporated into our budget. So start thinking about if you have any projects that you think needs to be done, and maybe get your committee together to look at some of these things. And
also, Mike, maybe you could begin what Mr. Schloss was referring, you know, putting in place in case if we do decide to have a cannabis business here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of things to look at. And I'm sure we'll be having a finance meeting soon. And that's the report.
Thank you. Councilmember Herbstrom, community development.
Before you go, I have a question for you. What do you anticipate our output would be for this cannabis? Why would we put out any money for the cannabis thing?
No, I don't think it's us putting out money. I think it's the revenue. There has to be a specific.
Oh, the revenue. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that word. Okay. I don't understand.
That's the whole point, to reap the money, not spend it.
I'm not working anymore, so I don't get revenue.
Where was I? Connie?
Nothing new to report.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Mocker, Public Works.
Just a couple little things. I guess we sent the new truck back to get worked on. It had a small hydraulic leak. I don't know if it's come back yet. Yeah, the new one. It didn't sound like a big thing. It sounded like just a little hydraulic leak that needed to be fixed.
That's on the lift. It's on the lift, not on the motor, not on the engine.
Yeah, it's on the hydraulic lift gate. I guess we had a complaint about a pothole down on Tamara. So Greg Defoe, I guess, is going to drive around town and see what other potholes needed attention and see if they could get Heights down to come out and take care of that.
Good.
And that's it.
Councilmember Trammell, Utilities.
Yep. I think they took care of those potholes, I think, but maybe not.
Yes, I think I know that they did.
Okay.
I was told that Greg went out and did them.
Okay, somebody did. The last meeting I spoke of an input manhole going into the wastewater plant. They opened it up and they got about 10 5-gallon buckets full of grease and roots out of it. So that has been cleared with the manpower from the from Mike's people. So that's taken care of now. That'll do it.
That's great. Thank you, Joe.
So no grease down the drains. It really builds up. It becomes greasebergs, right?
Joe, I just wanted to comment on that. That may be something to put out a reminder as a little add-on to a flyer or something to remind people that grease does not go down the drain, because it will clog up our sewer lines. It gets clogged up with other materials that are in there and creates plugs up. And be very costly to the town and to taxpayers too.
Maybe on our next flyer, we could have a list of like flushables or not flushable. Don't put them down the toilet. Don't put grease down the drain.
Right. Remind them to keep a tin can. If they open a can of green beans or something like that, keep it near your sink and put your grease in there and don't put it down the drain. It's a problem, real problem. Yeah. And it can cost the homeowner a lot of money too. It can clog their lines, and it often does, you know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I know Anna puts it on the water sewer bills and an occasional flyer. So
it's a good idea.
I hate telling people too frequently, like don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, but in the long run it prevents a lot of problems if people are aware of it.
Well, we may want to put out something that says, thank you for not putting your grease down the drains. Thank you for not flushing the so-called flushable wipes. You guys are great. You've saved us a lot of money. Keep up the good work.
Positive reinforcement. Absolutely.
Tell them it's tax money. Saving tax money. They'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay, reports of borough officials. Mike, do you have anything?
Yep. Okay, just... mentioning that the question about the contract with FAR, is Kathleen be sending this to him to get his signature so we get it all finalized?
Yes, I'll have to send that out to him to sign, and then it will come back. And
right, okay, good. Okay. There's nothing more for us to do. Okay, that's all.
Mike, did you want to mention anything about the school, the latest information?
Okay, the latest about the school was that we changed the meeting time to 7 o'clock. We had a 6-3 vote to do that, and I put the resolution in to do that. And we got more money in this year. So there's no, you know, there's really no immediate threat to the school.
Dire right this moment.
And you know, we did have the resolution that we passed last December, which said that the school would not be closed without a public vote saying that it should be closed, which could be a vote to not give the money that's needed. And that in the event that there was, even in the event that it did close, then it would not be conveyed to any entity other than the borough, so to keep it under local control.
But also what was announced, that barring anything unforeseen, barring anything drastic that was unforeseen, we really should be okay until about 2025, which is news,
and thus far this year we're fine, and you know, and hopefully, you know, my feeling, what I would advocate for is that even if we have to raise the, you know, go above 2.5%, we put it on the budget, and hopefully people will continue to vote to support the school. I mean, figure out how much it is per person. It's not really that huge an amount.
No.
And hopefully it's worth it to people to have a school in town.
But it also buys us time to get everything, you know, to do whatever, however we want to handle this with funds, whatever we're talking
about. I think the continued involvement of the council is a good, you know, the mayor and council is a good thing, and it helps in maintaining the fact that there is public attention to this point. That's important.
Michael, okay, thank you. Is our principal, did I hear that our principal is leaving?
Yes. Friday was her last day. And as of right now, we're sharing a new principal CSA from Millstone. Her name is Karen Berry.
Right.
She's the curriculum specialist in Millstone. Now she has a contract through June. And then it remains to be seen whether, you know, it will be mutually agreeable for her to continue and sign a new contract.
Right.
Yeah, that's really up to the school board.
Yeah.
I think it was encouraging to see that some of the additional aid that the school received was choice, was earmarked, or it said something about choice for choice students. I think that's a good sign, because that would be the way, if we could continue to get more money for choice students, it'd be a good way to,
sure.
You know,
well, another thing is this, there's this lawsuit, which is now moving forward on integration lawsuit, saying that the state is very much segregated. And of course, we've taken the position that we're willing to take in more students, you know, from diverse students from the area. And, hopefully this may become quite relevant, that the choice program has been disfavored by the current administration. It was something that Christie liked. And the current administration hasn't been encouraging the choice program, but this may have to change now, because the courts may tell them that this is something, Dave Hespe, who's been advising the school board on this whole process, he came out with an article pointing out that the choice program, which already exists, provides a means of getting more, allowing more kids more flexibility to go to different schools to provide for more integration in the schools. So we have to wait and see what happens, but that is a promising development.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
And we have to keep working.
Right, exactly.
You know, we have to keep working at it. All of us who care about it have to keep working.
And with the email that I got, or the text I got from John Hoard, who's a school board member, about working with the Board of Education, because I'm a liaison, and Michael and I are both liaisons to our respective bodies here. I'm looking forward to working together with the school board to do some remediation of areas and grounds and all, and helping to fund some a lot of that work. And I think we could do that through the municipal budget.
Yep, I think so. Not really talking about that much to clean up the tree.
No.
You know, clean up a tree around, that's hardly a major.
Well, it's also the monument, maybe making sure the monument lighting is working.
Well, that's something else.
The electrical house needs to be addressed too, because there was a hole. It still is a hole in the roof. I'm sure it didn't cure itself. And the soldiers monument toward the front, there was input before about that area needing to be addressed. I think Nona mentioned that at a school board meeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a matter of cleaning up the trees that are.
Yeah, so I think we can work
back
on
those trees. That's
maybe big deal. Some grant money available next year as well that we can apply for. So
good.
Receive some. Okay, counselor, are you there? Do we need a closed session? I know we do.
Mayor, before we do that, do we have any old business or new business?
Yeah.
I have something I want to bring up.
My vision is awful and I can't see at the line.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Is there any old or unfinished business someone would like to discuss?
At this point, it's all old business, it seems like to me, but there were a couple things that came up that I think we ought to have some discussion on as we move along. I got a call from Jeb this afternoon. Somebody bought the house that Katie and Kyle, my daughters, live in. That's next to Jeb's property. And they promptly painted the house that Maria had tastefully painted, a flat gray looking. It's an investing group. Some real estate management company bought the property and they're going to rent it. And so they had some landscapers out doing landscaping. They didn't know where the property lines were. They cut down some of her plantings that were mature plantings. And the management company, it seems to me that there's a lot of management companies and investors looking to buy properties that are, because there's really a low inventory of housing properties, and people are getting able to get high rents now in this market. And that we may be having more and more real estate management companies and investors wanting to purchase some of the properties that are more run down or lower cost, just for the sole purpose of renting them. And there's a lot of turnover with some of these rentals. I know that property has had four or five different tenants since it was owned by Maria Del Piano, and short-term kind of things. And so what you get is sometimes you get tenants that they're not really interested in the town. They don't want to get involved. They're there for a year.
It's transient.
Yeah, you get a transient. Yeah.
Somewhat transient, and it reminds me a little bit of what we went through with the Airbnb kind of units where, you know, the place gets bought up by somebody who's interested in buying and renting the property or making money off of it. And so I think in some ways the current situation, because, you know, people have short-term leases, a year-long lease, and then new tenants come in, then new tenants come in again after another year or a couple more years, it creates a problematic situation where
community at that point.
Yeah, they're really not here for the community. They're not moving. They're moving because they
have no vested interest.
For the house, and then they leave. And that's all right. They have a perfect right to do that. But I wonder if any of this might be addressed. I don't know if it's legal to limit
the number of rentals,
longer term leases for tenants in these kind of properties where the property is owned by a real estate management company and they're in it, you know, for the income stream.
Longer than a year?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing some things out there. Maybe 2-year leases or something, but I don't think you can regulate that kind of thing as far as I know.
Can you limit the number of rentals?
Are you asking that?
Generally speaking, I mean, you know, it's private property, so they can deal with it how they want. I mean, our overlapping jurisdiction there is in life, health, and safety. So every time the occupancy changes, can require a CO inspection, as you know, and registration. We can require out of landlords or property owners who don't reside within the town to register with the town. We can obviously monitor short-term rentals with greater scrutiny because it's a commercial enterprise. We can require landlord registration so you know where all the rentals are in the town. But functionally, I mean, if someone wants to let their cousin rent their house for 3 months, there's not a lot we can do about that. It's their private property, but we can certainly ensure that the life, health, and safety aspects, which is our jurisdiction, are covered through proper inspections upon each change in occupancy. That's your biggest power to regulate it. And then obviously property maintenance. So you can require landlords to register, and then you could revoke their registration if they fail to abide by our ordinances with clean properties, no trash everywhere, things like that. You know, obviously property maintenance is also within our jurisdiction. So, you know, those are the avenues by which you can, you know, regulate those sorts of things. The length of leases and things like that is governed by mostly state law. But with respect to the municipality, those are the things you can do.
Yeah. Well, because the property lines weren't real obvious, the workers that were brought in was not a landscaping company per se. It was a bunch of individuals who were hired to clean it up and a weed whack and all. And they went way past the property line over to Jeb's property and remove things. Maybe there's something that can be done with that.
Wait,
to for the property owners and their people that they hire know where the markers are, know where the property lines are.
Sure, right.
I mean, so it's their, it's your responsibility when you're doing that sort of thing to make sure you're on your own property. So obviously they have a civil claim against them. It's not much because it's really probably not, you know, largely compensable. But it, I mean, one other avenue that the private resident could pursue is filing a complaint in municipal court for a trespass, which is a...
She said that they said, well, you know, we'll replace the bushes or whatever. And one of them was one that takes probably about 20 years to come to full maturity. And so it's not, you can't really just replace that, that one bush. But she went out to a couple different nurseries and got some prices. And they agreed, you know, they were amiable as far as that was concerned and amenable to compensating her for it. But still, she had to go out and go to various nurseries, get estimates and all of that. And they just, and they did whatever they wanted to do along those property lines.
And that's so, not the first example of that in town. It's been happening frequently.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let me throw this out. How would people feel? And this was something that I was dead set against many, you know, years ago, but demographics have changed in town. Things have changed. The culture's changed. And, you know, we have trees coming down, people parking all over their lawns or creating parking that, that is illegal by putting down gravel and parking next to the house and on the grounds. We might want to mull over having more than a very part-time code enforcement officer to drive around, check to see someone's cutting down a tree. Do they have a tree permit? We're running into this a lot lately.
I'll tell you, I'm in favor of that because I do see more and more of it as you ride around, and
you see more and more violations. Believe it or not.
People have actually made cul-de-sacs. You know, they've actually put in their own road in front of their house. I mean, you know, paved it and then put out cones saying, this is not a turnaround. This is my own private cul-de-sac, you know, and we have had issues with that. And just to get back to this particular issue, I think it's crucial that housing inspections be done whenever there is a turnover like that in the house. I think we need to make sure that all properties before they're, when there's new homeowners there, get COs and get inspected thoroughly for that. It's the right thing to do. And I think by having, employees who have enough hours to do that work will ultimately be beneficial to us.
Right, so that's what I want to know. Would people be in favor of expanding code enforcement hours or hiring an additional person? I know Jeremy works full-time in Lakewood, so I'm not sure that he could, but maybe an additional person?
I would be in favor.
We're flaunting our ordinances left and right every day. Last week, someone really lied to Anna because they took down a number of trees and they were cited. So they came into the office to get a tree permit and they said, well, I didn't know. I just bought the house. I didn't know. I just bought the house. Well, you know, this is a small town. We all know everything. And Anna said to them, you've been living there for 3 years. You just bought the house from your landlord, but you've been there for 3 years. You know, you've been sent flyers. It's on the website, and they just sort of stood there and didn't respond to her because they knew they were caught in a lie. But I think at this point, it behooves us to have more code enforcement because even now we've had to send out some letters. People have put huge, huge unsightly, not mounds. I can't think of the word, like piles of debris, sofas, everything for big trash day. And they put it out, you know, well before a month ahead of time.
Wow.
And I just think.
I think it would help a lot to have, and if we could have one who's from town, that would be even better yet, you know.
No.
Call in an emergency.
Well, we've had people from town, and listen, let me tell you something. That's the worst thing you can do because you ostracize this guy completely.
We all know each other. I think that would be hard because we all know.
You know, you're going.
Maybe somebody very local, though. I mean, if they're from Millstone, I don't care, or Hightstown. Somebody who could come here if they need to in a hurry. And
well, that's a different story. But not. Look, I live here a long time. We've had some doozies.
Yeah.
And we've had some people fighting with each other. I mean, owners in town who were one time friends, and all of a sudden, boom, the lightning hits. No, that's not. I'm in favor of expanding.
I might be the one to say that, but things have changed dramatically in the last few years.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you
more. I don't think people understand that this is a really historic town, that we should take pride in it, that we have visitors come and see the town.
I have a guy across the street from me. It's atrocious. Absolutely. If I lived next door to him, I'd have his rear end in court every other day. He violates the rules.
We are actually on it all the time, Lou. It's just, things move slowly. We are on it all the time.
He's now got a big boat on his property, and he's working on it. And I'm sure it's not his. He's making money on it because he's a mechanic.
So what do we need to do to do this, to get the help that we need?
Either expanding our code enforcement officer's hours or finding an additional person.
Ask him if he knows anybody.
Now, right now, our code enforcement is complaint-based. Is everyone agreeable to changing that to having the code enforcement officer driving around?
Absolutely.
I mean, we can set the parameters, like, don't be too harsh, don't be too strict, but within reason. Within reason, follow the ordinances. Everyone's okay with that?
I have no problem with it.
Me too.
There would be warnings first before?
Yeah, I would.
There always is. There always is.
Well, unless it's something so blatantly.
Unless it's really ugly.
So I could shed some light on that. You guys have adopted the International Property Maintenance Code, which Jeremy follows, and you get a notice of violation first, and a time to cure and abate the violation, and then before you get a summons to go to municipal court.
Right. No, listen, we're not. There's no reason to not do this because we're not headhunting anybody. We just want the town not to look like a dump.
Exactly.
If you want to see violation, I invite you to come by on Farm Lane.
Well, the other thing I want to mention is that there's nothing untoward about, like, you guys are the repositories for complaints most of the time. There's nothing untoward about you sending an email to Jeremy. So if you increased his hours and you guys funneled complaints to him and he had the extra time to take care of them, he would address these policy issues. I mean, that's your enforcement discretion. You don't have a lot of employees here, so you don't get to exercise it very often, but that's one of them. If you increase his hours and then you funnel these kind of complaints and policy issues to him, you'll start to see results.
I email him constantly because it just seems like every day someone's done something.
Greg, you're absolutely right. We should make some indication that we mean business, that we do not want this town to turn into a dump. People will start to wake up.
Honestly, it has been. Little by little, it has been. Even now, has anyone seen, like, what people have put out for Big Trash Day? I mean, it's so unsightly, and it's much too early. And it's been out for a few weeks.
What's that?
People put out their big trash, like, a month ahead.
Oh, well, there's somebody with two, what do you call it?
Giant sofas?
Sofas. Let me tell you, after two rainstorms, you're only picking that thing up. That's going to be full of water.
All right. I'll speak to Jeremy and, see what we can work out here. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. And how about, new business. So the first item is use of the barrel hall. Renata Farias Rios requested for June 4th, 2022 from 2 to 7 p.m. for a graduation party.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any business? If anyone with
aye, aye. What?
Any other new business? Anyone would like to?
Let me say that I called Mike from the State Water Fish and Game Conservation. The water's backing up in our creeks over here by the sewer plant again. He'll be out or send somebody out next week to take a look again. And we're putting 3 water test stations in on Farm Lane while they are doing the water main replacements there.
And I'm looking for an attorney to sue everybody. You're doing everything on Farm Lane. Ridiculous.
We have 3 council members.
Farm Lane is the testing ground for everything.
I just wanted to add what Joe was saying. There's a little pond in the back near the end of, well, actually it's a millstone, where the kids skate on it, they do their ice skating and all. It's really adorable. That pond is now 4 times the size that it was, and this happened fairly recently. The creek is not draining, it's not running properly. Water is sitting for quite a long time, not dissipating. And in fact, it's up and it's hitting my property now, in the corner of my property, which is a 100-year floodplain, but there's water that's been sitting there for the last few weeks. Joe called and got some action on that, I think, through his call. Well,
about a month or two ago that happened, and they came and they cleared it, and now it's back up. So they said that there's new beaver activity back there, and there's new chew, is what they said. So they'll be around, take a look next week. Worst case, they'll have to put a beaver deceiver in or something like that.
I think we need to be more deceptive with the beavers. We need to deceive them better because apparently they're still working really hard. But it's a real problem because that whole area, there's a couple trees, huge trees that came down, and it's becoming essentially a wetland environment. There are spring peepers in there and wood frogs in there and it's a new lake is what it is. And I'm concerned about it as a property owner because, you know, what's going to happen if you get a 4-inch, 5-inch, 6-inch rain? It could be a real problem because it's not clearing. It's not perking.
Moving your house to a better neighborhood.
Listen, I know I live in the wetlands. I love the wetlands. I just don't want to be one of the creatures in the wetlands, you know? I need to have my little dry spot here because that's just the species that I am, you know. I need dry
land. You wanted a swimming pool, you put one in, right?
Right, right. So hopefully they address it. But I think it's a problem because we're at the headwaters of 2 watersheds and making sure these streams run well is important for a lot of reasons. It also affects the sewer treatment plant. Too. And if it's the water level's too high, the outlet pipe where we discharge,
would be underwater
into the
Rosebud house. Ask anyone who lives in a Rosebud house, they know about the water table and all the water because they have mold.
Yeah. But it doesn't have anything to do with the recent rainfalls. I walk the trail quite often and the trail is kind of fine. I mean, there's water in the usual places, but it hasn't really expanded terribly throughout some of it, but back here it's bad. It's really huge area now that's basically a new lake, and I'm worried about trees.
Come to meetings and talk about Lake Nona because her entire backyard is just a pool of water.
Yeah, so maybe we can look at that through the Environmental Commission as well, Michael, too.
Okay, counselor, we need a closed session.
I think you're a public comment also.
You know, I'm sorry. I think I'm
Were you giving a sample from the presenter today or what?
Thanks. At least that would be a good excuse. I have no idea. Okay, I'm going to open the public floor to public comment on any item at all at 8:35 p.m. Don't forget to identify yourself, Mike.
Michael Tickson, 37 North Valley Road. Just discussing potholes, just bring your attention to one that seems to be developing on Oscar Drive close to Rushdale Avenue. If you go along there, you'll see it.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, good. That's it.
Anything else? All right. I will close public portion at 8:35 p.m. Okay. Now for like the third time that I've said it. I think it's finally the right time. We need a public, we need an executive session, right, counselor?
Yes, ma'am.
We can
take time to answer now? Yes, ma'am.
Before you, Mr. Cannon, before you do, would you take a few minutes and let the mayor take a nap?
I'm not even tired. I have no idea why I'm so spacey today. I wish I had an excuse for it, but I don't.
You wouldn't mind. You should take a nap for about 20 minutes.
Maybe it's the contact high.
Maybe. He's been doing it for 20 years. If someone walks into his office in Hightstown, they might be able to get a better idea of what's going on in there.
Yeah.
No, even when I met with him, he didn't bring any samples. So,
well, we can ask.
All right, Kathleen will read the ordinance.
Okay, this is providing for a private executive meeting that excludes the public. Whereas the Open Public Meeting Act, enacted October 21st, 1975, permits a public body to exclude the public from meetings or portions thereof wherein matters are to be discussed, which are exempted from the requirement of the Act. And whereas the said Act requires that prior to the holding of a meeting or portion thereof from which the public shall be excluded, the public body should adopt a resolution at a public meeting providing for the holding of a private meeting. And whereas the Borough Council of the Borough of Roosevelt has determined that a meeting should be held from which the public should be excluded in order to discuss a subject which is exempted under the said Act. Now, therefore, be resolved by the Borough Council as follows. The next portion of this meeting to be held in private session. That the general nature of the matter to be discussed relates to the matters, potential litigation, contractual, private property drainage, and contractual first responder services. That no official action will be taken at the meeting, but minutes shall be kept and shall be available to the public after official action on the subject matter has been taken. It is anticipated the discussion conducted in closed session can be disclosed to the public after no further action is required in this matter. I need a motion to go into closed session.
Yes. I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Okay. And we will call to adopt resolution 2252. Mr. Ackland?
Yes.
Mr. Asikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Tremont?
Yes.
Okay. I need everybody. It looks like Mike is off.
Yeah, he went off right away.
Serious military time.
Okay, we are out of closed session at 9:14.
Okay. Our next meeting is motion. Well, I'll just say our next meeting is April 14th, that Monday.
Okay. So make a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
It's April 18th, I believe.
18th, yeah.
Yes, it is the 18th.
I'm just going home now.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Okay.
Aye.
All right, bye everyone.
All right,
good night.
You got
it. Mike.
Bye bye now.
Thanks, guys.
Mike.
Which Mike?